Mary, I'm assuming that you were able to get a copy.
Yes, I did. I did receive it.
What you bought? And, DVD?
No, I did not.
I found it on Daily Motion with Spanish.
Yeah, but the funny thing is I went back to Daily Motion, and all of a sudden it was there. Not only was it there, but it was a better copy than the one that was sent to me. So,
Oh. Okay.
Daily Motion is very hard to figure out. One day you can't find anything. The next day it's popping up everywhere. I don't know.
One day I shall come back. I refuse to even try Daily Motion.
Anyway, enough of this small talk.
Daily Motion rock.
Small? Small?
Services, LaRosie@book1.co.uk present the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast.
Hello and welcome to the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast, episode 232. I'm Adam, and it's most puzzling. And here's Debbie Melrose.
How far can we expect our voices to carry?
Kirby Bartlett Sloane.
Beryl here. Who is this?
And Mary Lang.
I had no idea water could taste so good.
And today a little something to that water.
Right? Yeah, some sort of beverage myself, but I'll have to wait now. I've got an itchy ear.
Lice cubes clinking, yes.
So this week we're looking at Planet of Giants. Which begins with a title sequence.
No! Really?
Which is very similar title sequence, funny enough, to the title sequence of The Day of the Doctor. So point that one out. Bring things right up to date. So the TARDIS crew are fiddling around with the TARDIS console, but in fact the Doctor
Master?
Is doing the fiddling.
Master?
I haven't even started the first sentence yet.
Oh, it's going to be a long episode.
Yes, Kirby. Yeah.
A particularly good example of the three-dimensional TARDIS walls versus the two-dimensional TARDIS walls in this one, because they chose some of their camera angles so you can see the gap.
Great. Thank you very much. Anyway, the Doctor is fiddling around with the TARDIS console, and there's something not quite right.
Legend has it that this is the time when he said the infamous fornicator line.
Yes.
Oh, right. Okay.
I did wonder what he was calling it.
Yes, yes, me too.
The fornicator's broken.
Yeah.
Is it really?
I think that was in Adventures in Space and Time. That
really?
Scene.
Do they have those in TARDISes too? Yeah,
probably, as we found with Amy and Rory. Mm. Anyway, moving
and,
back.
And Barbara and Ian.
Well, we don't know about that. And that was
oh, no, it's guaranteed.
Yeah, but they'd have a time baby if...
No, they don't have to have a time baby every time someone does it in the TARDIS,
yes,
surely.
Do
they?
Apparently so.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, what was I talking about? So there's something odd going on with the TARDIS because the doors open and then the screen of the scanner sort of blows outwards, but in fact it's just a video of the screen blowing or something. This for health and safety reasons, even in 1964.
Mm.
Too bad screens don't do that anymore.
I love it. It just feels so retro, this whole episode.
Yes.
You know, perhaps you need a new tube doctor,
yeah.
You know?
Yes. Yeah.
TVs used to have tubes, didn't they?
Yes.
Well, I think that when they said tube, they meant the actual screen itself was the tube, wasn't
it? Did they?
Yes, that was the tube.
Oh, okay.
You're thinking of the
I'm
valves.
I'm thinking of the valves. Oh, right. Yes.
Yes, when I was a kid. When I was a kid,
dear.
I had a thing about TV valves.
I don't really know much about TVs, as you can tell.
My TV, when in the very early days, I used to still live with my parents, when I was about four, the TV blew up and the dead television was put in the outhouse where all my sort of self-created toys were, because I wasn't allowed real toys.
Were you an inventor?
I had to make I made my own little living room in this little outhouse.
Did you have a mute dog and you like cheese?
You've got to be careful of the word outhouse, because in America, outhouses were exterior bathrooms. Yes.
Yes.
The loo. I mean, the shed.
Storage shed, you know.
It wasn't a shed. No, it was more of a conservatory, but I like to call it an outhouse because it was part of the house that was out. Anyway, I used to make these armchairs out of cardboard boxes. You just sit on them and turn them into little armchairs. Because you sit and the sides would stay in place, so you stick your arms on the sides and you'd sit on the middle.
And the pressure
bit.
Would go.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, that was, as I said, this dead television was in there, which used to fascinate me, which I managed to get the back off it, and all these little glass valves, and I would pull out and throw them, and they make a pop noise, and I think it's fascinating. Pop! My parents weren't entirely impressed with this.
I bet they weren't.
But it was great fun, I can remember. I was 4 years old at the time. And I can guarantee to you that television would have shown me Patrick Troughton as Doctor something or other. Cool. Doctor something. We don't know who or something. Anyway, moving back to this episode. Yeah, so something's going on with the TARDIS. The Doctor's not quite sure what's going on, but they do manage to land it. And everything seems all right.
Yeah, they keep going on about space pressure, don't they?
They do, don't they?
Mm. Oh, yes.
Mm. It's the space special, and sure.
Nowadays, the Doctor can open the doors anytime he wants, it
seems. Exactly. You can just hang around outside.
Even in mid-flight, yeah.
That's because of the development of the force field.
Right.
Because there wasn't... Because obviously he'd only just nicked the TARDIS in some ways.
So he's
to create the force field, or how to operate the force field at this particular stage, Kirby.
I like the fact that he's kept the brakes on for all this time.
Yes.
Well, he didn't use the brakes in this episode.
No, but no. Apparently the noise is because he kept the brakes on.
Did anyone notice the... Master?
Oh, good grief.
Did anyone notice the precursor to the klaxon instead of the cloister bell?
No.
No.
Yeah, when the doors are having their issue with not closing, there's a klaxon going off in the background, which nowadays would be the cloister bell.
Oh, thank you for that, Kirby.
No, I didn't know that.
So anyway, they get out and they find themselves in some strange place that looks like concrete, and then they find a massive, what Barbara thinks is a snake. To me, it looks like a giant earthworm.
Yes,
worm,
to me, yes.
It's amazing they didn't... those things are so close to where they are, it's amazing they didn't see them.
Huh?
Throughout the story, they do that. They walk frantically right up to something.
Let's
and
go
don't
around
notice.
This corner. There you go.
Yes. They find one egg and they think, oh, this is wonderful.
Yeah,
and not 3 inches away is an entire pile of them. And then they go, oh, look.
Yeah, as if he couldn't see them himself.
Nobody looks up to see where they're going. Yeah.
And then a dead ant. A dead ant is sitting on top of the pile of eggs you just referred to.
The first incarnation of the Doctor, the series, they were trying to be more educational than anything else. And so you'd get the history ones, and then you get ones like this, which is all about the natural history, and, you know, with all the ants and the giant bee that passes out and dies in front of them, that sort of thing.
Well, I'll talk about that later in regards to the educational aspects of this particular episode. In the meantime, I've just tried opening up a window and it's... Oh, there we go. So they find the eggs, and then a little bit later, Barbara is advised by the Doctor, because she's a bit stupid, that it's in fact a dead earthworm, not a massive snake. But even at this stage, they haven't worked out quite what's happened in regards. They just think they're somewhere that where everything is so much bigger, not the fact that
they're actually
so much smaller. And then
he might have caught it by smell or something like that, but no.
Well, it wouldn't be funny if they sort of wandered upon this incredibly smelly thing called a dog turd or something like that, or a cat turd.
The cat wee everywhere. Oh, it smells like cat.
I believe the cat had a name. It was Sammy.
Thank you for that, Kirby.
It's a bit interesting that they go on about the molecules later on and how the molecules are different sizes, yet they can still smell exactly the same.
Right.
True. Yeah, whereas scent molecules would probably be different as well. Yes. And there's, later on he's going, I can smell cordite, I can smell this.
Yeah,
that's
true.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how that would or wouldn't work. But I'll tell you what, talking about this film reminds me of that film. It is one of my favourite films of all time, The Incredible Shrinking Man.
I wasn't going to say, was it Honey, I Shrunk the Kids?
No, I do like that.
We just watched Honey, I Shrunk the Kids a couple of weeks ago.
I like Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. But the good thing about The Incredible Shrinking Man is that at the end of the film has a bit of a sad ending, because he keeps on shrinking and shrinking and shrinking, and then the film ends. He does a bit of a bit of a spoiler there, but it's a classic old film, and I absolutely love it. It used to be repeated quite regularly on school holidays, and yes, I'd always watch all of it because I always really enjoyed it. Moving on. Right, so yeah, Ian finds some rubbish on the floor that indicates that they might be on Earth, and then the penny starts dropping, although they don't find any pennies.
Do like the way they cut the scene between Susan and the Doctor explaining.
Yes.
That's not rubbish. Someone actually put a seed packet on a stick for the Night Synod stop.
Yeah, look there. See, look, there's the stick going through it.
You see it when you see the sidewalk.
Like a lolly stick.
You can see that when you're looking at the set.
When they're on the path.
They did the full-size set because they tried their best to match things up. Like when you see the drain pipe that the Doctor and Susan crawl up later, there's a little pebble next to it, and you see that on the full-size set as well.
Yes. Debbie's just going, oh, at the little model TARDIS.
I meant to take a picture. I've got a TARDIS that's about an inch tall. I meant to take a picture of it in my hand.
From a railway.
From a keyring.
Once that funny-looking little TARDIS actually fits in into a story.
Yeah. It's funny that Kirby was talking about last week, a little bobble of light on top, which is what that one's got.
Yes.
And I find it interesting, too, that when they climb up to see where they are, I mean, they send... You know, the lithe and athletic and able ones all get pulled down, while decrepit old Doctor is the one who insists on being the one to climb up there.
There you go. Let's go. There we are. I'll do it, my dear. Don't worry.
Let's send the most fragile person up there.
Well, actually, that was unplanned. They had planned to send Susan up, and she was the one who was scripted
to send Susan up in some way, because it was Barbara that had her aunt in this story.
Master.
I had to say that joke.
Susan was the one scripted to actually look over and see the house and everything, but they made the quote rock face too high for her to see over. Because she's only 5'3".
Oh.
And right, so that's bolstering the Doctor up so he could see her.
Yeah.
So they could bolster her too. She's light. They could push her up.
They didn't put the top foothold where she could see, even if they pushed her up. They did all that at the last minute.
Flapping your ears, magic.
By the way, as the Doctor's coming down, you can see that whole rock wall shaking because it's only a painted, it's only a model.
It's the usual treading heavily on fiberglass.
Yes.
Sound, isn't it, as well?
So this is this point that they all realise that they're very, very little.
Yes, there was the lolly stick going through.
Yes, I can see that now. And then the call goes very dark because there's a shadow approaching and the man picks up Ian in the matchbox. And poor old Susan is distraught. And then he's just sort of bashing himself against the walls of the matchbox for a bit. Meanwhile, Chainsmoker... sits down and decides he's going to hurt his shoulder as well.
Yeah.
Decides to have a smoke while the Doctor, as you just said, peeped over the top of the paving stone thing. Was that paving
stone? And it's normal. It's normal for smokers to always lay their cigarettes and their matches down on the damp ground.
When smokers, I used to smoke, it was exactly what I did.
That's where you put it.
Smokers are quite messy people. They just flick their butts and matches everywhere.
Yes, it's a perpetual fight I have with my husband.
The world is their ashtray.
Yes.
So anyway, pussycat.
Sammy, the foot pussycat.
We see the cat because we know that sometime soon...
He's going to be pivotal to the plot at some point,
Yes. And then,
except he wasn't.
Kirby, was it you who posted up the picture of Forrester being in Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
Yes, absolutely.
That was amazing.
Oh, cool. I wonder where he...
I'd spent ages
kind
going,
of jumpy, aren't you, Mr. Valiant?
Yes.
I haven't seen that, but I would say he didn't look much older, and it must have been quite a long time afterwards.
Yeah, look at the picture that I posted. Mm. He looks very, very similar.
Yes.
Does he play an American character?
Yes.
Oh, I'm impressed.
The owner of the
R.K. Maroon.
Yeah, R.K. Maroon of Maroon Cartoons. Gets caught playing patty cake with Jessica Rabbit.
Back to this story.
No. That's not who gets caught.
No.
The patty cake is Stubby K.
That's it, yeah. Sorry. Been a while.
Anyway, never mind. moving away from the Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Master. That's important.
That's important, okay. Well, I'll shut up.
You had two Doctor Who actors who later showed up
Roger
in
Rabbit?
Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Yeah,
Alan Tilbur. Stubby K, Delton the Bannerman. 2 years later was in Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Brilliant. Thank you for that. Anyway, right, that's a good point. It's a good little fact, I suppose, isn't it? Yes, I could have used that for my 101 facts about Doctor Who, but no, you tell me now when the book is on the verge of being published.
Well, then you do another one.
Segue comments from the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast.
All right, he gives Farrow his last...
Special thanks, too.
Yeah.
...cigarette. And the fact that he's called Farrow always reminds me of Blackadder, because
Lord Farrow, yes,
is the one that Blackadder has pretend to be, isn't it? In the head, I think the episode was called. Yes, Blackadder. By the way, Kirby was a very funny a British comedy.
I know
series.
What Blackadder is.
Setting you up, Kirby. Don't worry.
You're speaking to the choir there.
Yeah.
I
have to get my own back somehow.
We watch Blackadder constantly. Mm. It's one of our default things if we just want something funny to watch on Netflix streaming.
What about Red Dwarf?
I like Red Dwarf. I can't get anyone else to watch it.
Oh, shame.
I don't understand why they don't.
Not worry. For me either. Not for me.
There's a cannon goes off and we find that Pharaoh's dead.
No, this is one of the established stories. This is a canon. But
it's terrible when you have to input your own budum tissue, isn't it, really?
Yeah, Adam, I think at this point you just turn the commentary over to Kirby.
You're getting bored, Mary.
he's talking more than you are.
Well, I'm trying to talk,
As of last week, I didn't think I was going to be able to contribute much at all. But thanks to Rob Lansdowne for a bit of research assistance, I was able to get some more input.
Anyway, so they start realizing towards the end of this episode that there's a funny smell around, apart from the dead body, but the
I like the way
Ian holds
up his handkerchief to see if he's breathing.
I'm about
I love
the smell
that.
Is not the dead body.
Oh, yeah. It's I love that little teeny handkerchief.
That is really
good.
Going
to blast
him to his mouth?
Yeah, I think
check
they did
if
it.
He's still alive.
You can see it's a two-dimensional picture behind him, but they did do a really great job in trying to create that.
Yeah.
It's really good.
So leave them alone.
I bought it, yeah.
Ian does disappear. His top of his head does disappear at one point during... when he's walking in front of the...
there you go, it just did.
Anyway, so they get approached by Buddy Cat. And it's a great close-up of the cat's face to make it look big. Very good. And
The one interesting thing is that parts of this were filmed at Lime Grove and parts of it were filmed at Television Center. And they filmed the cat at Lime Grove and the reaction to the cat at Television Center.
Oh, okay. So when you're basically Susan, the only one that spots it initially.
I'm just amazed Barbara's hair stays the same all the way through.
Yes.
Yeah. I think her hair is...
character in itself.
Yes, exactly. There you go.
So, yeah, the cat is basically going to get them, but it doesn't by the next episode. It loses interest, conveniently. It's very unlike a cat to lose interest in a possible...
Yes, in
meal.
Small, running around things, yes.
Yeah. And so the cat slinks away. Maybe someone's tapped its little food dish.
That's the only way to get them to move, isn't it, really? But it's completely against type, isn't it? Why would a cat just ignore small things?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So anyway, they do quite well with it could hear these very deep growling noises, which they can't decipher, which are obviously the people talking. And, of course, their little voices would be like little indecipherable squeaks too, which is correct to a degree. So basically, if you shrink yourself down to the size of a mouse will sound
be roaring like a lion, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
The mouse that roared.
And, yeah, so Danger approaches again, so Ian decides...
The Mouse That Roared has William Hartnell in it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, thank you for that. Anyway, yeah, so I was going to say, Ian, is it Ian and Susan hiding there?
Yeah.
Or is it Ian Barbara that's hiding the suitcase? Ian Barbara.
No, Ian Barbara in Barbara. The suitcase.
No, briefcase.
Yeah.
Briefcase.
Yes. Briefcase.
It's a briefcase.
Yes. While Doctor and Susan... that's a bit that got me, is that when he lifts the body up, he turns his head to the right.
Yes. Yeah.
Sorry, to the left.
Yeah.
It kind of helps the guy turn him over.
Yeah. He's got rigor mortis very, very quick. Yes.
Between the two episodes being filmed, they filmed them at different times. And in the first episode, the outside of the house and the dirt area and the flower bed and the sidewalk are all different sizes, different widths than they are in the second episode.
Thank you for that, Kirby.
Mm-hmm. And of course, we typically have the twisted ankle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yes. Yes. And of course, she needs water somehow to fix her ankle.
Right, the magical water.
Yes.
Yeah.
What kind of water did they have in the past? Sorry, I didn't mean to knock the table.
Your name, Isabella?
Didn't mean to knock the table, sorry.
Anyway,
and then she speaks of this huge bruise she gets from a paperclip. Yeah. It's like, how do you know? You haven't, you know, your pants are tight and they're still on.
She
how do you know?
Taken
yeah, did she pull them down quickly and have a quick
look? Yeah.
While this leads to a talking, she could have done that.
They're still, she's still in the briefcase. She's not injured yet.
Oh, yes, of course.
While they're rattling on.
Yeah, so because old Smithers is...
I like the fact he's splattered with stuff, Smithers.
Yeah, but he's also a bit... He doesn't understand that yet how dangerous this stuff is. But anyway. So there's a point when they have to cover up the murder. So Forrester decides to put the briefcase in the lab, which enables a rather dazed Ian and rather bashed around... Barbara to get into the lab, and she's hurt herself. Oh yeah, well, fair enough. Yeah, well maybe she can feel the bruise for her trousers.
No, she wouldn't be able to roll those legs up.
Okay,
well, she would not. You know.
I think they did a good job at making the large briefcase prop.
Mm.
It looks real.
Yeah. I do many like of the props in this, even if they're not officially to scale, I still bought it. I love the props in this.
Yeah.
Yeah,
there was so much attention to detail with the briefcase.
I think they had this stuff in Blue Peter a few years later.
And the sink.
Place somewhere.
Oh.
Yeah, it's good. So, yeah, so they moved the body. The Doctor and Susan decide to climb up a drain pipe, which would have been like climbing up something like, one of those transmitter thingies.
Yeah.
Do you see the little white pebble?
Yes. Yeah.
If you look at the full size set, it's there as well.
Okay. Keep an eye out for that.
Thank you for that, Kurt. Yeah. Clever man, isn't he?
He is clever. Yes.
Yeah. So they climb up the side. Sorry, they climb up the
slightly corroded inside the pipe, isn't it?
So is that what enables to get grip? Is it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't imagine what must have been inside that drain pipe.
It smells of chemicals, so it should be clean.
Well,
really?
Yeah, well, that was a slight rewrite. It's the chemicals that he's smelling are soap and disinfectant.
Not
so it is clean.
Not the insecticide.
Right.
Which they sort of find a pile of
there
seeds.
Would be soap scum.
And Barbara decides that she's going to have a poke around the seeds, of course.
Sitting on the litmus paper is cool as well.
And
like
it's all sticky on her hands, and she uses Ian's handkerchief to.
And of course, Ian does not notice, what she does with the handkerchief or anything.
No, and also he keeps on going on about how deadly it must be for people.
Yeah,
of their size.
Yeah.
And she should perhaps have said something at this point, but obviously felt a little bit silly.
Why is
point,
it?
Isn't it? They wouldn't do that now, would they?
Master,
yes.
Uh-huh. Why is it if the it's a scene which is missing? The cat gets killed by touching this stuff, but. Why is it that Barbara doesn't get killed?
Exactly. Well, maybe she's... all you have to do is touch it, don't you? And she
exactly,
did touch it.
Exactly,
touching her face, and she's touching the others. And
there's a couple of shots where you can actually see the dead cat prop. Just barely at the edge of the screen.
Okay.
Thank you
I didn't
that,
notice that, no.
I thought the cat had eaten something, not that it had just touched the stuff.
He'd eaten something that had
it in it. That was my understanding.
So anyway,
Ian's... I like the fly hypnotising Barbara.
Yeah, but I like the fact that Ian climbs on
Barbara
the
just stands there
briefcase.
It's another one, and you don't see it until you're right on it. Yeah.
That's a great scene, though.
I do love that whole unlocking the briefcase. That's such a great prop.
It's really, really well done. But what is great is the little fly puppet thing. That was really, really good. Of course,
yeah, believe it or not,
faint.
Master?
I think I'd faint if there was a giant fly.
Yes.
They did not make the fly for this story. It was borrowed from something else.
No. Oh, okay.
They just happened to find they found it. They found it apparently in the BBC stores and decided, okay, we'll use this.
Find out where that's from.
He's a great character, this chap.
He is. The murderer. Forrester,
yeah. I like the way he speaks as well. So the Doctor and Susan have managed to climb up the drainpipe into the sink. The fly that freaked out Barbara lands on the stuff that she's just touched. And just touches it and dead. But, well, she's not an insect. So it's an insecticide.
I know, but... Oh, Kirby touched them.
What? No, I turned my microphone off because you didn't want to hear me sneeze.
Oh, bless you.
We actually did hear half of it.
It sounded like you dropped dead.
Yeah, I heard a...
Sorry. Anyway, so yeah, they...
I'm sorry, I'm not supposed to be laughing.
No, you're not supposed to be laughing. Be quiet. Yeah, so Ian and Barbara, who's suffering from
things
the poison.
Things are much more funnier when you're not allowed to laugh.
This is true. Decide to climb down the chain for the plug.
I saw the stone, yeah.
But the lads, as we call them, decided they're going to go and wash their hands.
Master.
Yeah, what
master.
Now?
Mm-hmm. the way that the stage was set up for them for filming, even though it looks like that Ian and Barbara are to the left of the screen and up from the way that the Doctor and Susan are looking in the actual studio, they were over to the right.
Yes. I'm sorry, I thought it was going more of that. I thought I'd take you're normally a bit longer, so I thought I'd take the opportunity to have a sip out of my bottle here of Coke Zero. What did he find? He found the dead fly. That's right. Smithers finds the dead fly and gets all excited because it died instantly and.
It works. It'll work on locusts, isn't it? Terrific.
But they're going to wash their hands, and the Doctor and Susan have gone down the plug hole, and he pulls a plug out, and that's a crisis.
Well, I just found it that the cat supposedly drinks poisoned water, and that's why it dies so fast.
Oh, okay.
Makes you wonder at the end of it, but that's what happens to that whole place.
Part of the plot, Smithers.
If the stuff is eternal, the whole place is toxic.
And that scene is in the four-part version of... Have you seen the four-part
version? No, I haven't seen the four-part version.
Do you want to borrow my DVD?
Yes, please. I'd like to borrow the DVD.
Debbie wants to borrow my DVD so she can see the four-part version. Yes?
I started to watch the four-part version. I did not like how they did it, even though...
I will say, it's very well done. That's one of the very rare things... Who's that chap called again that's a super fan that thinks he knows it all?
Ian Levine.
There we go. Yeah, he did an extremely good job. Extremely good job with this. No, with the fourth part.
Master?
As did
master.
The voice actors, yes.
One of the interesting little details that I loved when I realized it was there, at the very end of the second episode, you see the sink and it's draining.
Mm-hmm.
And the credits are rolling through the draining of the sink, and it doesn't fade to black until the sink is empty.
Oh.
Didn't notice that.
It's all the way through, and then once it's empty, then it goes black.
So you should hang on to the end.
I watched it, and it seemed like the water was not emptying very quickly, and I thought that they went to black before the sink was empty.
Oh, watch it.
Enough of the sink emptying podcast. Back to
that could be a whole new genre.
Yeah, it could be.
Sorry.
Let's start a podcast.
Isabella.
I'm sorry, I keep knocking the microphone. I do apologise.
So, anyway, they're wandering around the sink, wondering whether the Doctor and Sue's not all right. Of course, they're fine. It wouldn't be much of a TV show without the Doctor, would it? Not so much about Susan.
I like
Susan.
The way he disguises his voice by putting a hanky over the mouthpiece. But what I don't understand is why the lady on the switchboard knows that it's not Farrow's voice, as Farrow's only just turned up to visit. How does she know it's
well,
not
Well, no, now, in the, I read that in the cutout version, she does know him. She knows, is it Farrow?
Don't
she
give
knows
the game away, because Debbie hasn't seen the four-parter yet.
Because she even makes a comment about having seen his car down at the house. So,
okay. Because, yeah, Debbie? Yes?
And dealing with the switchboard, you notice that she's also doing some post office stuff behind her. So
that,
I read someplace that the post office also ran the telephone
they
for
did,
a while.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They were also Heidi. Probably the local grocer. And there's Heidi in the back. they were also in the in the general stores as well. Yeah, you'd generally have the lady running, selling the groceries, would then nip round to the post office counter and then answer the phones.
So apparently this was way out in the country, which is why there's still a switchboard.
Yeah, and you can see loads of shovels behind her as well.
Yeah, and she even says, oh, it's the farmhouse again. So it's like she knows where
she's
these like exchanges are.
It's a sketch set, isn't it?
It is, yeah, two so sketch.
have they gone past using switchboards on the Isle of Wight yet?
Not quite.
Right. Anyway,
oh, and I love the phone number being part letters, part numbers. I remember back in the day when, you know, our phone numbers started with letters.
Postcodes and then numbers of areas.
Used to have numbers
on the dial. Yes, and letters on the dial, didn't you? Yes.
And mobile phones had exactly the same numbers and letters.
Which
is quite interesting in some ways, isn't it? Well, I think it is. Don't you think, Magic? No, he's asleep.
He'll fart in a minute.
No, he doesn't generally do it in the evenings.
just the mornings.
Well, if he does, it's because you're here.
Well, all right then.
So, no, I do move to the farting in the evening.
Part of the business.
Fart of the Disney.
Part.
You notice that
we're
he's
being
calling.
Cruel. Yeah.
You notice Forrester is calling a Whitehall number.
Mm-hmm.
Whitehall was pretty much the government exchange.
Yes,
we know. We do live in the Great Britain, you know.
Well, some people listening might not have understood that.
Oh, well, there you go.
Mm. I knew it was in London, but I didn't know it was a government.
Yeah, Whitehall is
where
government
now.
Is based and the whole of Whitehall area.
That's where America decided to name the White House slightly after Whitehall. You know, it's a bit of a
Whitehall 1212 or 1212 is the Metropolitan Police number, or was.
Thank you very much.
Right. I don't understand, because she says Whitehall, he says Whitehall WH1887, and then she goes 287 ready for you, and it's like, really? Which number is it?
Anyway, move away from the Switchboard podcast. Back to
we don't hear him say the whole number.
Because
it cuts away.
I was going to ask Kirby, when he did his quote, did he put a bit of cloth over the microphone?
No, I put my hand over the
microphone. Yeah, he muffled it slightly.
Put my t-shirt over the microphone. Do I sound different now?
Does Adam sound different?
I've got my t-shirt over the microphone. Do I sound any different?
No,
it's because. Not at all. Hang on, I know why. It's because.
Who is it? Did Adam leave the room?
No, it's the wrong microphone. Sorry, the one you're listening to is the one on the Mac. Sorry, I can't get my t-shirt up that high.
Where is it?
Might scare Debbie if I put my. It's up there somewhere on top.
There you go.
That's your hand, woman. That's not my t-shirt. Oh, I've got my tie.
It's
muffling.
Oh,
here we go. No, I've got
my
lens wiper.
He's got a hanky to go over.
No, it's a lens wiper.
It's a lens wiper, but it's still like a hanky.
I'll just drape it over the microphone.
There we go. Right. Do I sound any different now?
No.
Who's that?
Somebody new come in the room? Who is that?
I don't know, but Magic didn't bark, so must know.
So anyway, yes, I found that quite amusing, actually, the fact that he was trying to describe
it.
And it didn't work.
It didn't work.
Of course it didn't work.
No, I think it doesn't work. So he was obviously a bit thilly, wasn't he? Anyway, so find this notepad with which Susan discovers it's got some sort of formula on it. And so they work out, they write down the formula onto a smaller thing, and Barbara starts feeling a bit worse. And they think they hatch a plan.
There's a much longer scene where they go over and transcribe all of those formulas and stuff that's in the reconstruction.
Look, what have I just told you? Stop telling Debbie what's in the reconstruction because she hasn't watched it yet.
The questions are probably going to have a feature in that.
No, they're not. You just can't tell.
I'm at a disadvantage this week.
I gave up watching the combined 3 and 4.
Debbie isn't going to because she likes
there better not be questions from that version.
Yeah.
Anyway, so they hatched this plan up to try and phone up the switchboard, yeah. Don't they? Or the police or something.
Using corks.
Yes, there's a coilless wire. I don't know. I was a bit confused by that. But anyway, they climb up it and use corks to wedge up the receiver. And
hear us?
You could put a ring modulator.
I wonder what it sounded like at the other end.
They should have put a ring modulator on it. It sounded like living Daleks, didn't it?
And then help! Call, please!
And then Barbara faints. And
The giant handset was set. The handset set, yes, mm-hmm. was designed to be as close as possible to the actual handset, and even the little buttons which push up as you raise the handset, those had people underneath pushing them up.
Thank you for that, Kirby. Anyway, so Barbara faints, and they realize that she's touched this insecticide, and she's probably going to die. And there's the doctor. His face there, it's an iconic look on his face, isn't it?
I'm not sure.
Yes. That's right. And then
within wheels expression.
Smithers then makes Forrester feel a bit suspicious, so he gets his gun out of his pocket.
Gives it a fondle.
It's a very girly gun, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
And, so that's right, because they phone the house back, and then he says, they say, oh, it's Mr.
Farrow
there. Yeah. Hang on, I'll just get him for you by draping this cloth over
the... Listen, it's the same guy.
Isn't it funny that he doesn't even try changing his voice?
The policeman's just in there, you know, obviously her husband. Oops, sorry.
Well, he does change his inflection a little bit, the way he talks, but he doesn't change his basic voice.
No.
Ah, at 16 minutes 20, let's see.
Mm-hmm.
16 minutes 30. Wait a second.
Get to move on.
36 seconds when the two men walk in to the laboratory.
Just going back a second.
If you look by the sink in the lower right hand corner, you can see the dead cat.
Oh, okay. I just thought it was a head and someone had accidentally got into the shot. Yeah, there it is. Yeah.
Doesn't look like a cat at all, does
it? Just looks like someone's hair.
That's right. So they.
I suppose if it had been in colour, we would have realised.
Ian's hatched a plan to explode the aerosol by putting against a Bunsen burner, which is a great scene of them lighting the match. And
that's brilliant.
And then
was that Ian's plan or was that the doctor's?
I thought
plan?
It was the doctor.
All right, maybe it was the doctor
decided to put the can up.
Yeah, all right, maybe it was the doctor. Yeah. I can't remember. Anyway, ultimately there's a big bang, and
blinds.
No, that was the 11th Doctor.
And that's right.
Yeah, blinds, whatever his name is.
And the gun ends up in Smithers' hands, and then the policeman arrives. And
but that's it.
In the nick of time.
Yeah, but that's it. There's no sort of repercussions or anything addressed.
No, but that's the weird thing about this story, which I'll talk about in a minute. Mm. Anyway, so they go back to the TARDIS, and the doctor fixes everything, and the siege shrinks, and Barbara's all right, and just
has
needs a drink of water.
Mysterious glass of water, yes.
Yes.
It's a gin and tonic.
So that's essentially it.
That's what I'd be after.
Mm-hmm.
The Planet of Giants, now, it's the thing that I've found a bit annoying about this, and quite a lot annoying, actually, is the fact that it's very patronising. Mm. It's like bangs you over the head with these sort of educational things that obviously are designed for kids. And this one sort of is the most of these sort of series of episodes, stories, sorry, like that. It really does hit you over the head with this is a science lesson. Mm. Which I didn't like. The other unusual thing is that there's two completely completely different sets of characters, and there's no interaction between the Doctor and his pals to the rest of the cast, which has never happened before or since. So basically, the only thing is that it's two completely different plays in some way. There's a slight bit of interaction, but. That's quite interesting. They just went a bit mad with the banging you over the head with the science lesson thing. On the whole, I quite like the idea of it, and they just didn't quite do it as well as they could have done because they had all the sets and everything. They did a good job with the sets, and some aspects of the story were quite good. But that's the thing that sort of let it down for me. I did like some of the characters in it. I think three parts was about right. So they probably did. I mean, I'm not going to give the game away without missing a fourth episode, but I think they did a good thing reducing it to three episodes. And it's certainly not the worst Hartnell story. I'd say it was a mediocre one. I don't mind watching it over and over again because it's okay. It's just not. But it's just got a few flaws, quite big flaws, but not enough to me to say that it annoys me to a degree like certain other Hartnell stories do. Because probably if they were three-parters, I probably wouldn't mind them so much. But that's basically. I don't think I'll say much more about it. Really, is Debbie?
Okay. Well, I liked it. I liked it a lot. It was another one of those, obviously, as it was still finding its feet, another episode where it's being educational, being for children. But that's what Who originally was for. And when we all started watching it, we were kids, so we didn't know a lot of the facts that they were pointing out. Weren't you? Oh, sorry, but, you know, the majority were kids, and so you were learning as you went along. You're watching it, this brilliant science fiction program, you know, oh my god, they've been shrunk, oh my wow, you know, that sort of thing. And so I was watching it, trying to watch it with that whole sort of starry-eyed wowness, but I found it was a bit preachy, a little bit patronizing, obviously of its day, but it was left hanging too much for me, this whole oh, everything will be fine sort of assumption. The policeman turned up, everything's going to be fine. How is everything going to be fine? In what mm-hmm. way are you going to prevent this eternal poison not mm-hmm. getting into the local water system, not affecting the local flora and fauna? You know, it was just the eco in me wanted to go, well, sort it out. But apart mm-hmm. from that, I really quite enjoyed it. It's one of the best ones of his series, I think. Mm-hmm. His era, in my opinion, one of the better ones, because the sets were sumptuous.
Well, the sets were great. Yeah.
And
not
the acting was fine.
I still think that they could have done better with it. I'm talking about The Incredible Shrinking Man, which was made in 1957, which was 6 years before this.
That's where they might have got the fly from.
Maybe.
They probably had a better budget for The Incredible Shrinking Man.
Yeah. No excuse. It is really. I'm just right, Kirby.
I didn't like it.
Fair enough.
Okay, move on.
I found it boring.
Should I go blasphemer?
Soon as yes, you should.
Star snored.
Star snored.
I found it boring. I thought that even in some of the sections where they weren't editing together two previously filmed episodes, there were just strange breaks in continuity. I mean, all of a sudden, they're back. They found Ian again, just out of the blue, and they're just suddenly together with him again. Just the whole cat thing, unexplained. The sets were great. The acting was fine, but it was just strange. I didn't like it.
Okay.
And I doubt very much that I'm going to watch it ever again.
That's
fair enough. There's a few in that era that I wouldn't watch again. Mm. But yeah, that...
Oh, definitely.
No.
Mary, here we go.
Well, I'm on board with Debbie. I loved this one. I think this is one of the best ones of the Hartnell era.
Yep.
Because whenever my world is looked at in an unconventional way... Mm. It's great. It's an alien picture done, but it's my world they're looking at. And so like a kid, you know, I was like, oh yeah, this is great. Oh, the big telephone. Oh, I love the big sink, you know, and I was just really enjoying all of that. And I forgive it, you know, all the continuity breaks and things like that, just because they were experimenting and they were doing things that were pretty out of the box. Now I know, you know, with that echo theme, which, yeah, they were hammering us over the head, but that was the same time when books like Silent Spring came out, and there was this whole exploration into DDT and how that needs to be stopped. And also, yeah, like Debbie said, it's of its time. It was mm-hmm. part of that. You know, we have to look at these things in a different way. But it reminded me somewhat, there's a big Finnish story where Nyssa cowers from this incredibly frightening alien being that Tegan then looks at and says, oh, that's a tiger. You know, because Nyssa has never seen a tiger, but they're in a circus, you know, so it's our world again, but it's our world looking alien to somebody else. And so I just really, really enjoy that kind of stuff. Mm. The questions I have, you know, again, I'll say, you know, why throughout this did they never notice big hulking things right in front of them? The fly, you know, the pile of seeds, yeah. You know, all that kind of stuff. It was always like, oh my, and the cat, you know, whatever.
You just look up and there's a great big sign, you know, it's like, oh.
Yeah. And Barbara's self-sacrificing attitude, she could have washed her hands at any time, you know, but doesn't. She doesn't do anything about that. So that was kind of annoying. And I wondered why the doctor was wearing a cloak for this whole thing. I mean, It seemed so out of place. Well, then it all
just
came
got
to
back
light.
From the Reign of Terror.
Well, nobody else is in there, and his clothes underneath are not from the Reign of Terror.
He,
it's just the cloak.
Liked it.
He liked it.
Maybe he did, but it all made sense when he turned around and picked up that big seed, you know, because he couldn't touch it. It's like, oh, that's what he needed the cloak for.
Just happened to have it. Yeah.
Yeah. But no, I watched this 3 times. I enjoyed it so much. So there you have me and Debbie, there shoulder to shoulder. Yeah.
Well, I would just I'd rather sort of emphasize my point, the fact that, like I said, it could have been. Even in 1963 with their budget, it could have been 64. So much better. It's just, it was just, I think, was let down a little bit by the script being a bit too channeled towards the educational side. But they had, like I said,
They needed the money for Dalek Invasion of Earth.
Yeah, but they had the sets there. So they didn't need money for a better script, did they? No. So it can't have been that good a script because they dropped an episode.
Yeah, which I think was good.
Mm. Yeah, that's why I said that. But
I think they made a good choice.
No, I watched the 4, definitely, but I enjoyed the way, the pace of the 3, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So there we have it. That's the Planet of Giants. And talking to Planet of Giants, we had a bit of a conflict, didn't we?
You all keep being interrupted again, as usual, isn't it?
What, Kobe?
Planet of Giants.
You all keep abbreviating dichlorodiphenyl trichloroethane for some reason.
No,
it's so much
really?
Easier to say it.
CD4, DN6.
Yes.
Well, good afternoon, 20 Megabyters. It's 7:45 on Saturday, the 2nd of August. Let's put it this way. Clearly that my view that Brainy Morbius wasn't a brilliant thing, wasn't the best thing done ever. clearly, Planet of Giants is the best Doctor Who story ever made, isn't it?
There you go, yay!
No, it isn't.
Sorry.
Undaunted shall I go on, so I'm sitting here with a glass of Chardonnay in my hand. I've just not recently got back from watching, sorry, narrowly managed not to lose against Worcestershire at the cricket. Kirby, wake up! So I thought I'd do a bit of podcasting, feedbacking, about Planet of Giants, and it's, you can see why it's not exactly highly rated. I mean, the first episode, not a lot really happens, does it? Because they land, they get shrunk, then they sort of walk around a bit, then the bloke gets shot. The second episode, things get a bit better, because they actually try and do things, try and work out why they are so small, and also what's happening with this cyanide thing that's killing off all the insects and everything like that. They have a cat that briefly menaces them. And the end, they have a bit where they manage to set fire to something. A lot of the thing of a guy there with a gas tap scorching against a canister, and he just stands and looks at it. And next thing you know, it blows in his face. So,
right.
I mean, it really was. There possibly was a good story in there. It could have been actually a 2-parter, and it was originally a 4-parter, came down to 3. But you could have actually taken a fair bit out of it. So, I mean, all in all, it wasn't that good. There were some good bits in it, though. Now, the models themselves, I thought, were absolutely excellent, the way they did that. You know, you saw the large version, you saw the small version. So, like, the briefcase, you saw the larger of the briefcase, and then Ian and Barbara's getting into it, and it really did match up. And I think you had the large the sink, had the small sink, things like that. I think the model work was very, very good, and very cleverly done. Now, the thing that really fascinated me about this story was the incredible moving sink plug.
Yes.
Right, you go to the end of episode 2 where the guy's washing his hands and he puts the plug down, and as you notice, he puts his toe, he's right on the sink. Then you have the recap at the beginning of episode 3 and he puts it down on the other side. Mm-hmm. Then we have Barbara and Ian, the Doctor and Susan, who are inside the sink, and you say, oh, he's putting the plug back in, and then he's up on top of it. And then Barbara and Ian turn up, and they climb down the plug chain, which is now suddenly back in the sink again. So either there were four plug holes in this sink or something like that, but it was, I just thought it really did quite amuse me. So there you go. The cast performance, I think Hart, the William Hart, the Doctor, was really strong. He was very much controlled. He worked out what's going on, and he was able to persuade, I mean, Susan got it as well, persuade Ian and Barbara, this is what's happened, this is what we must do, this is how we can do it. Barbara's a bit wet. I mean, you know, when she's refusing to sort of tell Ian about the fact she picked up the insecticide and she collapses, and you never actually see, well, why does she actually get cured? Is it because the molecules are suddenly shrunk in size? I mean, that was a good bit at the end where they shrank the seed down to its real size. I thought it was very cleverly done, but there were a few plot holes. Susan was quite good. Barbara was wet, and she just fell over no ready apparent reason, you know, doing really the Liz Sladen thing. And Ian was, well, Ian was very, very masterful as Ian, wasn't he? I mean, he always is. That's Ian being Ian. Rest of the cast, we couldn't really say much about them. They were all sort of pretty caricature, you know, a sort of gruff hitman type person, the loony scientist, the typical rural, I be the telephone operator, and I be the village constable, you know, it's almost like that, wasn't it? So, yeah. But all in all, it was quite entertaining, and the bit at the end where the Doctor's saying, where are we going to go next, and it comes to the World End, good lead off. So it was enjoyable. I watched it on Daily Motion. It kept stopping on me, which is really annoying. But I might get to see the DVDs. I'd like to see the full one as well, and some of the extras as well. But really, I don't think anyone's going to shout at me for saying nothing really so much right about. So anyway, I'm looking forward to working out what the randomizer comes with next, and I'll speak to you soon. I'm about to pop next door. So we've got a barbecue going on there. Wonder what the noise is off. I've also got the cricket of Birmingham against Essex. Kirby, wake up! So until then, be seeing you.
That was Andy
Nunny. Thank you, Andy.
Oh, thank you, Andy.
Glad you're still with us after last week.
It was hard to hear part of the beginning of that because of the dog sounds.
Mm. Yes, well, that's because they were having decided that at the moment they're going to have a bit of a play.
Mm. It didn't help that I had a ball in my hand, did it, really? That, you know.
And I just knocked the microphone.
My bad.
Yes, it's a thank you, Andy. Mm-hmm. I've got some more.
Billy.
How you doing? This is Billy with a few thoughts on Planet of the Giants by Lewis Marks. This is my third experience at seeing a story from the Harnell era all the way through. I guess from my perspective, the way I see the Harnell era, I think, will be pretty much how a younger fan who loves the new series would look towards the classic era. Mm. I've never really got any way to see William Hartnell, to be honest. But that's fine. I've enjoyed what I've seen so far. It's been quite good. But in regard to this story, initially, the story didn't grab me like other Doctor Who has. In fact, I've had quite a few attempts at trying to get through it without falling asleep. But when I did manage to get through it all the way through, it was okay, nothing fantastic. One aspect that came to light after watching this story was how crabby the Doctor was. What a crabby old git he was, really. I mean, in that scene where the Barbara and Ian was quizzing him about the doors opening in episode one,
when he was worried, that's why.
And impatience. And not a very endearing quality, but I guess a redeeming factor was that he did apologise to Barbara sometime afterwards. Now, it's no secret that the first Doctor was quite crabby. And to many, this, I think, is an endearing quality in the fact that in the bigger picture, he's out for the better, he's out for the good. And I guess Doctor Who, that's what it's all about, really, isn't it? But I think if the dramatised documentary of the 50th anniversary is correct, Adventure in Time and Space, I guess his portrayal, the cantankerous side of the first Doctor, I guess that portrayal is an extension of what he was like in reality. Interesting. Mm. Mm. Anyway, in regard to the story, I was a little bit disappointed there was no interaction between the main cast and the bigger people. It was a slight reminder of that movie from 1989, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. Putting aside, of course, the nice subplots of the attempted licensing of the DN6 pesticide. A few other good points were, I guess, was the sink scene. I enjoyed looking at the sink scene. The cliffhangers were okay with the cast, and again, in the sink scene as well. Certainly not the worst Doctor Who I've seen by any means, but by no means is it neither the best. Would I take the time to watch it again? Most probably not.
Oh.
But there you go.
Mm.
So that's my thoughts on Planet of the Giants. Take care.
Thank you, Billy.
Billy's tastes are very similar to mine.
I'm loving the mixed reviews, definitely. It's great. When we haven't got all one side and then we all gang up against someone who doesn't like it.
Oh, no, I love it when we gang up with somebody.
Yeah, so do I, Mary.
Yeah. Usually it's me, everybody's ganging up.
Hello, my podcast is in Kirk. Last week we reviewed with Brandon Morbius. Terence Dix was angry when he came back from holiday and saw how his script had been changed.
Oh, look what they done to my brain. Look what they done to my brain.
Planet of Giants by Louis Marx. A famous book called Silent Spring, published in 1962, 2 years before this story, pointed out the dangers of DDT and other pesticides which were killing wildlife. DDT was phased out in the 1970s and 80s. Barbara said that being in the moving briefcase was worse than the Big Dipper. The Big Dipper was a famous roller coaster at Blackpool.
Still there.
Mm-hmm.
As Andy Nunney has just said, and is mentioned in the DVD commentary, at the end of episode 2 of Planet of Giants, Smithers leaves the sink plug on the work surface. This would prevent Ian and Barbara from climbing down the plug chain. In the reprise at the beginning of episode 3, the plug is left in the sink.
Well, when Andy Nunney's just the said it, why are you
it is on concrete.
Just in case Andy
later, when Farrow picks it up, it is on the grass. The TARDIS crew explode the aerosol because of the plot. It explodes just in time to help the policeman. Otherwise, it would just attract unwelcome attention from Forrester and Smithers.
Mm-hmm.
No one came to investigate the gunshot at the start of the story. Bye for now.
Thank you, Ian. I'd just like to point out that you spelled the word TARDIS, TARIS. If Kirby had seen that, he would have mentioned it.
Well, he hasn't posted his script online yet.
That's probably why.
Yes, he did.
Oh,
yes, he did. Where? I was reading it while he was right at the top of the 20 megabyte page.
Excellent. Oh, hey, hang on.
I have it. I haven't updated.
Hang on.
No.
This is an refreshed opportunity for.
Okay.
Oh, there it is.
Oh, be quiet. Oh no, where is it? Kirby's wrong.
I had not refreshed the 20 megabyte page. That's why I missed it. I see it now, and he does not misspell it, although TARDIS should not have periods. Even though it is an acronym, it should not be T period A period R period D period I period S period.
Right, we've got some more feedback, written feedback, and I'm not sure, Debbie should be, you can read it, Debbie. I don't know whether we should have Mary or Debbie reading this particular bit of feedback.
He did kind of want Mary to do it.
Mary.
He said Mary or someone, so
referring to me, isn't he, but he didn't call me by name.
I think Debbie should read this
one. Do you want to read it off here, or do you want to read it off your iPad?
I'll read it off there.
Oh, that means I've got a scroll for you.
Yes.
That means I've got to read it as well. Go on then.
One of the things, for better or worse, about the early years of Doctor Who is how experimental it was.
Not quite how he says it.
All right, how does he say it?
No, I'm only joking.
Have we mentioned this is Matthew?
Yes, this is Matthew. Okay.
Sorry, Debbie.
Right, I'll start again.
Thank you.
One of the things, for better or worse, about the early years of Doctor Who is how experimental it was, at least in terms of the sheer variety of stories produced, those making it tried to figure out exactly what it could and couldn't do. As a result, you go from historical episodes like Marco Polo to the epic on no budget science fiction stories like The Daleks or The Web Planet to grim stories like The Dalek Invasion of Earth and The Massacre. it's no surprise that the show's second season would kick off with Planet of Giants.
It's like an auto cue.
After all, it's a story that took an idea originally intended for the first ever story of the series and actually brought it to the screen this time. As a story overall, though, it's a weird one. On one level, it's the TARDIS crew off on another adventure, except this time they've been shrunk and are dealing with the everyday blown up to a massive scale. The problem with that is that the reason this idea got abandoned to begin with was that it was deemed too difficult to pull off. And I think the story shows us why from unconvincing insects to some ridiculous pseudoscience going on from shouting into phones to Barbara's miracle cure by having suddenly grown to normal size again. Indeed, with dead insects turning up here and there, it's hard not to see pre-echoes of the web planet that would come later in the same season. On another level, which is even odder, it's an ahead of its time but poorly done ecological thriller that feels like padding more than anything else. Speaking of padding, I'm sure someone has already mentioned this having been cut down from 4 episodes to 3.
Well, we didn't mention that,
no. With the last episode of the story as broadcast being a highlights reel of the back half of the original story. Given that the DVD version allows us to get a good idea of what was cut to begin with, it's not at all hard to see why.
Well, it's not going up again. That's what she said.
Fair enough. This, then, is an odd story.
Because it's the end.
It doesn't quite fit into the series that Doctor Who became, and certainly not the new series as we know it today. As part of those early years of the show, when it could possibly do anything, it's an interesting artifact. But really, that's all it is. An artifact.
Thank you, Matthew. Brilliant. About time, too.
Thank you, Matthew. Yes, thank you.
I bugged him earlier today to provide
this. I saw you've done that. Yeah, I saw you've done that.
Yes. Well, he bugs everybody.
I do.
We love you, Kirby.
Isn't that what I'm paid for?
No.
Yeah.
You get paid.
We're gonna double your salary. Just look at all the feedback we got.
You get paid.
Yes, in Monty Python ephemera.
Oh yes, I've seen you receive that.
Yes. Oh, yes.
That was very quick.
Yes, I'm jealous.
I gave it to a very moody Heidi actually.
Probably,
on Wednesday.
Yes, yeah.
I sort of handed it over to her. So, can you post this for me? Oh, it's a bit heavy, isn't it? Put it on the scales. And then it went. That's just basically...
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Did she ask you what was in it?
No.
She didn't?
It's a bomb.
Yeah, it's a bomb, yeah.
Yeah, well, she's going to America. Those places, she was really worried what was in it, to be honest. Okay, right. So, where do we go? So, last week was the 20th... Pardon? Win a goodie bag with Doctor Who Adventures.
Cool.
That's all I'm going to say on that one. Tom Baker, a best-selling doctor on eBay. With less than a month... We used to do a feature on eBay, you know?
We did.
Yeah. With less than a month until the debut of the 12th Doctor, online marketplace eBay has compiled a list of top 10 doctors by merchandise sales on the site. Oh, there must be some sort of Doctor Who fan amongst the hierarchy of eBay. The top 10 doctors by sales are in tenth place. Mm. This is like the old charts. We used to do a chart before you came on the show.
Did you? Yes, okay, yes,
and with that music, you're humming as well.
Trying to
hum. Which is therefore...
Oh, dear.
Because Ben gave it to me. That's what she said. Let's see if I can find it. Just for old time's sake. Where is it? Oh, there it is. Right, here we go. Thank you. Oh, it's a bit loud. Hang on. Oh, sorry, it was play it loud. It was very loud.
Ow.
Is that better?
In 10th place is Peter Capaldi.
I'll turn it down a bit more. There we go. Right.
9th place, Peter Davidson.
You have the silly voice.
8th, Colin Baker.
Well, pick it up a bit.
You do it then.
All right, number 7, Sylvester McCoy.
They always paused for that bit when reading
they
the
didn't.
Charts. Yes, they did.
Number 6, Patrick Troughton. Number 5, Paul McGann. Number 4, William Hartnell. Number 3, Matt Smith. Number 2, David Tennant, but they've already said that number 1
Tom Baker.
Yeah, and that used to be how he used to do the charts. Now I've got to
they always paused for that bit. They did, I swear.
If you say so. So that was quite good. That's going to be a bit odd because this is a news feature, and we've already got the news music playing in the background. Mm. How am I going to do that one?
Yeah, that will be interesting.
Post production. Right. Four new publicity photos have surfaced from the new series of Doctor Who, with Niamh McIntosh playing, obviously,
Vastra.
And obviously these are all from episode 1. So a bit pointless considering that episode one is out there and everybody's more or less seen it. Well, not me, but you know, a lot of people have. But, you know,
yeah, not me.
Enough information is out there for us to know what characters are in that particular story, and most of the
I say nothing.
We know that that's the sort of. They did a trailer, didn't they? Mm. That had lots of little clips on it. But every year they do one of these trailers. Well, every year we have a series anyway. They always contain mostly scenes from the first story.
Yes, yeah.
So there we go. Right, Deep Breath Cinema tickets on sale in UK from the 1st of August. BBC have reported that the tickets to the cinematic outing of the Doctor Who new series premiere Deep
Are you guys going to go see it?
I mean Breath. Sorry? No. What, on the telly? What's the point? Telly!
Well, it's that crowd experience, you know. Yes.
Yes, I saw
it's
that.
It's quite tempting, isn't it?
Yeah, but yeah, it is tempting, but I'm not going to do that.
I have watched a story with... in a crowd, and it's really.
I know, I did that at the Doctor Who experience.
I did that with Star Wars.
That thing there, the Doctor Who celebration, not the spirit. Yeah. Which was fantastic. What I'm saying is that that day I'm filming a wedding, and it's very unlikely I'm going to be home in time to watch it. So I can't watch it.
Oh,
in the
no!
You're not going to sit and watch it.
Every
it
series
happens?
Of Doctor Who gets interrupted by.
Weddings.
Yeah. And I've just had another booking at the end of October, which they probably should... coincides with the end of the series.
Probably. Yeah.
BBC America announces Takeover Week cinema presentations. BBC America have announced that a series of events taking place in the lead-up and aftermath of the series premiere, Deep Throat, I Mean Breath, in the United States. During the week before the broadcast, the channel will premiere new specials relating to the show, including Doctor Who, The Ultimate Companion. Surely that's been on before.
That's been on BBC Three here, hasn't it? Yeah.
That's good, actually. I think I've got it on my Sky... box in the other
shown
room.
It again recently. Yeah.
I haven't watched it yet, though. I think it's one of those things I've had on there but I haven't actually watched. That's on the 16th of August at 9 p.m. The Real History of Science Fiction.
Time.
Yes. Oh. Colon. Yeah. Time.
Oh, is that the missing one? Because they did several of those Real History of Science Fictions and they didn't do the very last one. I wonder if that's the one.
That must be it.
I'll have to look it up. Yeah.
I haven't seen any of them.
Time, yes.
Doctor Who, The Ultimate Time
Lord.
They're
worth a
watch. On the 18th. I don't know. I haven't seen
it. Yeah, they were pretty good.
Okay, cool.
Are they? How do we get to watch them? They're American.
YouTube.
On the day itself.
When in YouTube.
When in doubt, YouTube.
On the day itself, Doctor Who live pre-show will be presented by Nerdist presenter Chris Hardwick at 7:30 p.m. before the premiere airs at 8 p.m. Doctor Who is then followed by another premiere, Intruders, before the show is once again back to focus on Doctor Who
After Who Live. Yeah.
What? At 11 p.m. the show aims to feature... Are they doing that in this country as well?
Probably.
Slightly over the top, but there you go. That's some events I've got bored of in America. Doctor Who World Tour Mexico City tickets are on sale, and I'm still rather annoyed that it just turns out that they're doing the Cardiff and London legs on the same day. The donuts. In Canadian cinemas, fans in Canada will be able to watch Deep Breath on big screen in participating cinemas across the country via Cineplex. Now, the funny thing about Canadians, I always find quite funny, is if you know they're Canadian, you go up to them and deliberately call them American, they get very cross. I find that quite amusing. Silver Screen August sale. Silver Screen are running a special offer on their catalogue of Doctor Who related albums during August, which includes their recent releases of the 50th anniversary collection and An Adventure in Space and Time.
Are they doing a Doctor Who prom again this year? They usually do one.
It's called the Doctor Who
Symphonic Spectacular.
It's on for a week at Wembley, and I'd like to go to it. And I've tried to say to Deb, I'd like to go to this. It's quite close to my birthday next year. And she's not said anything. And I don't know if she'd really want to go anyway, because it's just sort of music. But there's lots
but
of other stuff.
Cool, wouldn't it?
It would be cool. There's lots of other stuff there, because Alistair Pearson went to the first Doctor Who proms and said it was fantastic.
My daughter would like to go.
He was sat next to Russell T Davies, apparently. Ooh. In fact, talking of Alistair Pearson, he's been invited to a Doctor Who convention in Chicago next year. And he says he's never been abroad and doesn't really want to go.
That would be Chicago Sardis, I guess.
This year? The 14th? 2014.
Yeah, don't worry, he's not going.
He's not going.
Oh. He's been invited.
Oh,
he's not
here
going.
I was getting all excited.
Yeah. I'm still looking.
Why
at
doesn't he want
to
come?
One, he has never been abroad. Two, he hasn't got a passport. Three, he doesn't feel inclined to. Four, he doesn't like to blow his own trumpet anymore. He's sort of got over himself a little bit.
Have you guys bought your tickets for Conquistobras next year?
No, I haven't.
No.
A few people have been on different forums going that they've already got their passes to meet Paul McGann and they're very excited.
Oh, well, Mary's married on first name terms with Paul McGann, so she doesn't have to have passes.
Oh, yeah.
Next time it will be tongues.
Oh.
Philip Brammer has passed away. He's the voice of the 10th Doctor, the German viewers, and he's died after the fall
really
on a walking
interesting
trip.
There.
Pardon?
Really interesting there.
We might have German listeners.
The voice of the 10th Doctor to German viewers.
Very disrespectful, Kirby. Anyway, he's died after suffering a fall on a walking trip this week.
Edelweiss somewhere or other, yeah.
Didn't look much.
He also provided the voices for Gator in Battlestar Galactica. Cool.
Yeah. But he looks a bit like Simon Pegg, who was at the Monty Python that I went to.
He also did Martin Freeman's voice in The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Talking about Monty Python, when I obviously it was on UK Gold.
Yeah.
We sort of were, because it
wasn't...
Okay,
fair enough.
I recorded all the UK Gold. There's some fantastic stuff in UK Gold. They did all these, like, pre-show thing. In the interval, they interviewed all the Pythons, and then they went back to the show, and they would uncut the second half. And then the recording came to an end a good 5 minutes before the end of the show. I wasn't very happy.
No. Well, I was hoping.
I was thoroughly enjoying it up to that.
It
reminded
DVD
me how funny it was.
DVD doesn't do that, honestly.
I wouldn't have thought he would. But what you won't get on the pre-recorded DVD is all the UK Gold interviews and extras that they had before and during the actual show.
That'll be probably what they're going to try and attempt to do for the Deep Breath then, isn't it, really? That similar sort of build-up and...
Well, and then cut it off
live,
at the end.
Not cut it off at the end, but, you know, just the live...
I know, what I'm saying, it was just so annoying to have it on there, and I was just sat there waiting for the big finale of the Monty Python. It was the last
and
ever show.
Didn't...
No, I didn't see it, because they cut it off, although they are repeating it. I should really try downloading the repeated version. Anyway, moving away from Monty Python back to Doctor Who. With broadcaster ABC yet to confirm when series premiere Deep Throat, I mean Breath, will air in Australia, it seems likely that the cinema goers will get to see a debut adventure of Peter Capaldi first, as national theatres such as Event Cinemas and Palace Cinemas and local theatres such as Melbourne's Cinema Nova launch a number of presentations of the episode on the big screen, many from 10 a.m. on the 24th of August.
Yeah.
So I don't really care. Pandorica Convention guests announced. Phantom Films have announced a number of guests that will appear at their forthcoming Pandorica Convention taking place in Bristol over the weekend of the 27th and 28th of September. Katie Manning, Louise Jameson, Sarah Sutton, Annika Wills. Flash and Blade podcast, Annika Wheels, not an E.
Yes!
Annika. John Levine, Pick Sen Lim. I feel really sorry for him, you know.
What?
Oh, no, it's a different one. Pick Sen Lim. Captain Chin Lee.
From the Mind
I thought
of
she
evil.
Was dead. She was the kung fu person from the first of the... what's that film that Isabella really likes? It's really funny with Rowan Atkinson in it, where he's the...
Johnny English.
That's the one.
Yeah,
she was in that. Bernard Holly. I didn't know. He was still alive. Alan Raglan. Trevor Cooper. Bridget Lynch. Bloss. These are people I haven't heard of, so why am I mentioning them?
And also appearing is Alexandra Tynan, a.k.a. Sandra Reed.
Never heard of her
either.
The
designer of the original Cyberman costume.
But
so
some good guest
stops cool.
A bit where I got a bit bored. So that's pretty good lineup. But what annoys me is that I keep hinting to Deb about that women convention up in Middlesbrough, which has got a quite good lineup, although their VIP guest tickets are quite expensive.
Yes.
But there's another one in Lincolnshire,
one day,
which are very reasonably priced tickets, which I'm not allowed to go out to either. The Dwas auction in memory of Verity Lambert. Doctor Appreciation Society has sent details about an auction they are running, proceeds of which will be used for the recent commemoration of Doctor Who. It's good. I did well then.
Well done. Yes.
First producer, Verity Lambert. No, I'll get a blue dish.
Get a blue plaque, do you?
Yeah. Deep Throat, I mean Breath, in New Zealand cinemas. Fans in New Zealand will get the chance to watch the new series premiere Deep Throat, I mean Breath, only a few hours after it's broadcast in the United Kingdom.
So they're doing
aiming
for the same time as Australia, aren't they? Sunday, 24th term.
We're not going to get it the same time.
That's what she said.
We're getting it 2 days later.
And finally,
I'm sure you'll be able to find it on YouTube.
Do you mind stop interrupting
Thank
you
very much. I beg your pardon.
The Cineworld West India Key are offering readers of Doctor Who News 2 tickets to the screening of Peter Capaldi's debut in Doctor Who Deep Throat Breath. Whatever it's called. The screening will take place the 23rd. Oh, is it?
Wharf!
Yeah. Of August at Cinema Canary Wharf. Blah, 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 blah. Competition closes on the 15th of August 2014. Tell you what, don't need a competition to watch Doctor Who. Just sit down and watch it in your own front room.
Don't you have to watch out for Cybermen when you're around Canary Wharf?
Yes, you do. You have to be rather careful.
Do you?
Yes.
Yes.
If you say so. Oh, of course, yes. But that's an old, different type of Canary Wharf, isn't it? A very old version of it. Yes, anyway, it's now time for this week's edition of You Won't Get This One.
Probably won't.
Mm-hmm. You might. I think Mary will. She's watched it 3 times.
But I didn't take many notes. I was so...
Well, that was a bit silly.
I didn't take as many as I normally do.
No, don't give me that nonsense.
Well, I didn't look.
I'm not looking.
Well, you're finding out that it's kind of silly, you know?
Right. Hang on, I've got my page open there. My iPad was up the wrong way. Do you do clown music to me? All right. So the first question would therefore go to Kirby.
Master.
Who burnt themselves on the TARDIS console?
Someone burnt themselves on the TARDIS console?
Yes, they did.
I know.
I think Mary knows.
Mary said I know, so yep.
Go ahead.
Barbara.
Correct. Mary.
Yes.
What made the TARDIS doors open while they were in flight?
Something about space pressure being too great.
That's exactly what it was, yes. Debbie.
Okay. Yay!
What? Hang on.
Oh, dear.
Oh, sorry, there's a word missing from this question. That's confusing.
What? I really can't answer that. That's quite a huge question.
Right, here we go.
42.
That's who?
Anybody else?
42.
Right, what has its particular posture and appearance?
What?
Death. What?
Correct.
Death has its own particular posture and appearance.
Yes, it does. Right, yes. Kirby.
Master.
When did they find the dead ant? No, that's
dead
wrong. Shut up, I've read that wrong. It's you lot again. When they find the dead ant, what did Ian say it was as stiff as?
Ooh. A dead ant, I guess.
No.
I don't know.
Anybody?
Hmm.
Hmm. You didn't get that one. It was a poker.
Oh.
Mm. Yeah, I remember.
It plays cards.
Mary.
Yes.
What part of England was the packaging that Ian and Susan found from?
Norwich?
Norwich.
Yes. Norwich.
Yeah,
Norwich. Okay. Well, hey.
Well done. Debbie.
Yes.
What exhibition did Ian think they must have been at?
I know.
Oh, I've written it down here. Hang on.
I know.
Must be an exhibition like the World's Fair.
Yeah, that'll do.
Yep.
Kirby.
Master.
What size were they reduced to, roughly?
Roughly the size of an inch.
That'll do. Mary.
Yes?
Who did the matchbox that Ian ended up in belong to?
Pharaoh?
Yes, it was. Yep.
Okay. I wasn't sure. You meant like if there was something printed on it or what.
Debbie?
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
What is the name of the insecticide?
The N6.
Correct. Right. Now, score update. In last place with 2 points, it's Kirby. In second place with 6 points, it's Debbie.
Yay!
And in the lead with 7 points, it's Mary. Yay! And this is Kirby.
My leads never last very long.
Master? Master?
Why is Forrester a success, according to him?
I wasn't paying enough attention to care.
Oh dear.
Had a conversation. I'm a success because...
We're being flicked off here.
He doesn't let the word failure into his... his language.
Nope. The answer was because he doesn't allow the word can't to exist.
Right,
Mary. Okay. You didn't get that one right. Mary, where did Farrow plan to go on holiday?
Oh, yeah.
I
know.
France?
No, Luke.
Okay.
If you said rivers of France,
rivers
you would have got...
France.
You would have got France. An extra point. Right.
Okay.
Debbie.
Yes.
What did Barbara compare travelling by briefcase to?
Being on the Big Dipper.
Yes.
I knew that one too. Why didn't I get ones like that?
Kirby.
I'm a roller coaster fan, Master.
Kirby, how did Barbara hurt her knee?
Bumping up against a paperclip.
Yes. Yes, shouldn't rub up.
And that terrible bruise that she got, yes.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Mary.
Yeah.
What did the doctor compare the sink to?
Oh, I think I know that one.
The sink?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Debbie.
Is it like a sound box?
No.
Echo chamber.
That'll do. Yeah. Just on the verge of missing out there. Yes, that's correct. Right. Debbie.
Yes.
How did the Doctor and Susan survive being drowned?
They went into the overflow.
They did go into the overflow, yes. Kirby.
Master.
How did the switchboard operator introduce herself to Forrester? You won't get this one, by the way.
Oh, yes, I know this one.
No, I won't.
I think I know.
Go on then, Mary.
But Debbie said it first, I think.
Oh, did you?
Mm.
Oh, go on,
yes,
Debbie.
Yes, she did.
Strange operator here. That really tickled me, that line.
What? Strange? I thought she said county operator.
No, strange.
Strange operator.
Oh, okay.
Why would she say that?
Well, let me know.
Strange is probably the name of the district or mm-hmm. her call sign, basically, something mm-hmm. like that.
Debbie.
Mm-hmm.
Who did Forrester call on the phone?
Oh, someone in Whitehall. Ministry. I don't. Yeah, minister.
I don't think anybody
don't
else
know,
knows.
No,
there's nobody's
no.
come up with the I know.
Well, yes. Is it Mr. Whitmore?
Yes, it is Mr.
Yay.
Whitmore.
Yay!
Okay.
Woo. Right. So the scores so far: in last place with 4 points, it's Kirby. In
Yay.
Second place with 10 points, it's Mary, and in the lead with 12 points. It's This is Kirby's
and she
question.
She surges ahead again.
Indeed.
Stop. Master.
What was Farrow's first name?
He had a first name?
Yes, he's not.
Wow. Did they ever Farrow. Use his first name?
He did.
I don't know.
I wouldn't have written it down in a question. Anybody?
Nope.
Oh dear, he didn't get that one.
No.
The answer is Arnold.
Oh.
Mary.
When did they mention it?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, this is. Sorry, Debbie.
Oh, so, oh
in
yeah.
episode 3 when he was on the phone.
Okay.
Right, yes, who's got Debbie's question, isn't
mm-hmm.
it? Right. What was the improvement of DN6 compared to normal insecticides?
70% less dangerous.
No, incorrect. Anybody?
Nope.
Right, the answer was 60%.
Yes.
You've got that one right. So whose question is that? Kirby?
Master?
Is that right, Kirby's question?
No,
it was mine. The last one was mine, okay. So yeah.
So I've got confused, as you can see. Kirby. Yeah.
Okay.
What acid did Ian mention that was written on the notepad?
Phosphoric acid.
Well done. Mary.
Yes.
What did they use to prop up the telephone receiver?
Corks.
Correct. Debbie.
Yes.
Who was given the job of placing the corks under the receiver?
Was it Susan?
It was Susan. Kirby.
Master.
You won't get this one. What was the name of the switchboard operator?
Oh,
Hilda.
Yes.
Oh, my God, he did get that one.
He did
one.
Get it.
Hilda.
Hilda, not Hilda.
Hilda, yeah.
The policeman is Bert.
Yeah.
So there.
Okay, right.
Wow.
Right, Mary.
Yes.
If Barbara was made back to normal size, how much less effect would the insecticide have on her?
Isn't that like 70%?
Yes.
Yes.
I've got my percents round.
It's so weird.
Yeah.
Right, Debbie.
Yes. Shut up. What?
Right, this next question just illustrates what a twit Kirby is.
Mm.
What is the name of the policeman?
Bert.
I had a feeling that was going to be a question.
No, I knew that was going to be a question.
What a donut. Right. Kirby.
Master. Bert.
Bert.
What is the aerosol that was being used... being burned contained. What did it contain, the aerosol that was being burned by the Bunsen burner?
Some sort of insecticide. I don't think it was the
insecticide. Will do.
Okay. Right.
Mary.
Uh-huh.
What did Barbara have no idea could taste so good?
So close. Yeah. Don't even need water. To answer that.
Right.
Yes.
Debbie.
Yes.
What was the name of Forrester's scientist friend?
What, Smithers?
Yes, it was Smithers, yes. Right.
Smithers.
There's two questions left, they're on a free for all. Right. Who composed the incidental music for Planet of Giants?
Dudley Simpson.
Correct. Did you both say it at the same time? Did you say that?
No, I said it first. I said it first.
No, you both said it at the same time. You both get 2 points. Well done. Final question. What job did Daphne Dare have among the production team?
Tick. Tock.
I am not. Last chance.
I think she was one. She was a makeup person.
No, she wasn't.
She was on the commentary.
No, she wasn't. She was a costume supervisor.
Oh darn! See, I was not wikiing. I was remembering.
Sorry.
Wrongly.
Remembering wrong. Yes.
Therefore, the final scores are. In last place with 12 points, Kirby. And
that many,
in
huh?
Joint lead with 18 points each, it's Mary and Debbie.
Mm-hmm.
Yay! Right,
so, tiebreaker. Right. Shut up, Magic. Woo! Oh, it's Star. Shut up, Star. Right.
It's fitting because we're the only two that like this
story.
Yes,
that's true.
Yes. Tiebreaker time.
Oh, shut up.
Right then. Are you ready for the tiebreaker?
Stop it, Star.
Well, I don't think Debbie is.
Yeah, I am.
Right.
Yeah.
Here we go.
Yeah.
Who wrote this story?
Louis Marx.
Correct. There we are. That decides it. How about Mary?
I still think it was a joint first because we liked it.
Yes, I think so too.
Yeah.
And that concludes this week's edition of You Won't Get This One. Right. Next week... Oh, I just dropped my pen.
Yes, what are we doing next week?
Yeah, what are we reviewing next week?
Kirby was going to enlighten us.
Yay!
Enlighten us.
Enlightenment.
Which version?
Which version?
Hang on. What do you mean?
Whatever one I can get.
I don't like the new version. I like the original
broadcast
version.
What anybody can get, yeah.
It'll be the broadcast version.
Whatever Daily Motion can get.
Yes. Hang on. No, not bother.
It was quite interesting watching Planet of Giants with Spanish subtitles. That was quite cool.
Mm. So, is it a Monday?
Oh, you saw that version too.
You didn't listen to the Arabic version?
No. I might try that one.
I found it with very good video and everything.
I forgot to do the live quiz theme. Donut. That would have saved me some time. The live quiz theme.
Oh, sorry.
So, Monday next week?
Okay.
Monday, sure.
Yeah.
So enlightenment, and then after that, looks like Megloss.
Megloss.
And then it's deep throat, I mean breath.
Correct. I also posed a question that we could take offline if you wish.
Take offline?
When do you want me to start including reconstructions in the randomizer?
Ooh. I don't see it. If their reconstructions are on DVD, like the one that's on the flip to the one Debbie's going to be borrowing, because on this particular thing we've got Planet of Giants, and on the other side we've got
The Reign of Terror.
which is a reconstruction with a cartoon thing. They should be amongst the randomizer anyway, because they are fully released reconstructions.
Yeah, if it's on DVD, I include it on the randomizer.
I haven't really got access, even if
I don't have the DVD, I include it.
Well, I haven't actually got access to other forms of reconstruction, so therefore...
many of them are on YouTube.
Yeah, but they're awkward to watch, and I haven't got time to fiddle around. I did that with the original version of Marco Polo. Tried to watch that via... I did eventually get through it, but I had more time on my hands then.
That was one of the reasons why... Trying to watch Marco Polo is one of the reasons why I am turned off by reconstructions.
Exactly.
Well, I watched a second Doctor reconstruction once, and I found it watchable. I don't remember what it was.
Would it be interesting to give, have a different slant on it and just...
Yeah.
Maybe we'll do a little series of reconstructions at some point, but not at the moment.
Yeah, so when we run out of regulars, to
the big finishers.
They're good.
Yeah, they're good.
I don't think we should go down that road permanently anyway. But as far as I've got an idea, there's a big finish podcast
that people need to listen to.
Could be.
So we need to mention our sponsors.
Well, you can do in a minute. I'm just saying, after the new series has come to an end, we'll do a little sort of 4-week series of reconstructions. How's that sound to you?
That sounds all right.
Oh, you mean 4 reconstructions in a row? That might be hard to do.
Well, it's a challenge. Isn't it, Debbie?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Right. Yes.
Debbie. So, would you like me to put out a reconstruction randomizer?
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be a good idea.
How many reconstructions are there?
Yeah. 2.
4, 5, this, 6, 7,
yeah, but the reconstructions 8. Do include the ones that were actually 9, out on 10, DVD. 11, so. 12,
13. Oh, including those? No, yes, we've done course. Some of them.
Obviously not the ones we've done. I know it's wrong.
We've only done one. We've done the invasion.
Right.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18. Mm-hmm. There's 18 where they're completely missing.
Yes, okay.
That's not including the 5 that... have been put
out.
You are
sort of padding that bit out, as I just said. We'll do all the reconstructions apart from ones we've already done, which is 1. So there we go.
I'm already on Lavazzi there. Look,
all of them in the randomizer rather than watching all of them in conception. Yes, Kirby.
Why don't we slightly revise that and maybe do a reconstruction once a month?
He's bloody awkward, isn't
That's
he?
That's a good idea.
It is a bloody good idea.
I prefer doing 4 in a row. Mm.
It's like people might have got a bit bored of us all loving the Tom Baker ones for weeks on end. You know?
Once a year, that'd be even better.
So every time I do a randomizer set, I'll include a set of randomized reconstructions, and then I'll also link to where we can find them. How's that sound?
That sounds great.
Yeah, no, that'd be terrific. That'd make life a lot
easier. And then we'll do the regular prices. Because we still have 73 more stories.
Yes, right, okay. All right then, Mary.
Yes.
Who are our sponsors? And there's a clue in the question there.
One of our sponsors is whowon.co.uk.
Is that whowon.co.uk?
Yes,
it is. We've got some new items.
Yeah.
One of which is particularly excited, Debbie, and it's a photograph of me. No, it's a TARDIS? TARDIS throw blanket, price $14.99.
Yeah, you could sit under that watching the new series.
Good for the winter, but I wouldn't think you'd want to winter wear it at the moment. It's polyester throw blanket. It's 50 by 60 inches / 127 centimetres by 152 centimetres.
Nice, good for snuggling up for the Christmas special.
Yes, I wouldn't mind one of those. I don't think Debbie allowed me to have that on the bed, but I could have it downstairs for the winter, couldn't I?
Well, that's it. Just have it to snuggle in.
Reasonable price at £14.99. Also, you can still get the 50th anniversary coasters and various things like Doctor Who Magazine 476 and the Tales of Trenzalore by Justin Richards.
Would that be the Big Dipper? That's a coaster.
But I'm chain. You got one.
Here we go then. Hang on, just for Kirby. So those are the items you can get from whowon.co.uk, and Debbie is now going to outline what they've got on offer at Lavazzi.
Lavazzi.co.uk do the wonderful Dalek scarves and Doctor Who scarves and jumpers. I've got a sale on at the moment, so get on over there and get one for a little bit less than it was.
Is that it?
That's about it, yeah. But it's exciting because the one I like's cheaper, so I can hopefully get that now.
Right, the other thing I wanted to talk about is something I've done on pre-order. It's a limited edition 50th anniversary collector's edition DVD.
Oh, yeah,
shame it's DVD and not Blu-ray. I've ordered the DVD because you've got some stuff on it.
Some of us still don't have Blu-ray players.
Mm. I do, but I have it on my PS3 and that's really noisy.
Right, what you're going to get with it, or what I'm going to get with it, if I'm lucky enough to get one of these pre-ordered items, is a Doctor Who 50th anniversary limited edition collector's DVD for Whovians, I hate that word, and what?
The five-ish doctors.
I haven't got impatient person. For Whovians and anyone else who is a fan of Doctor Who, we are proud to present, as this is the BBC, by the way, we're proud to present a special collection of highlights from the groundbreaking 50th anniversary of Doctor Who. The limited edition collector set, doesn't say how many though, does it? Includes 50th anniversary special, Day of the Doctor, Matt Smith's Farewell, Time of the Doctor, Series 7 Finale, Name of the Doctor, 8th Doctor, Paul McGann, Surprise Regeneration of John Hurt, The War Doctor, In Night of the Doctor. We bring you backstage the special collection as it includes an exclusive cut of the read-through of Day of the Doctor featuring Matt Smith, Got Itchy Foot and David Tennant. Deleted scenes, new to DVD cinema trails and Mark Gatiss award-winning drama about the genesis of Doctor Who, An Adventure in Space and Time.
Wow.
The hilarious Five-ish Doctors, starring Peter Davis and Colin Baker, Sylvester McCoy and a host of special guests, will also be included on DVD and Blu-ray box for the first time. It is out on Blu-ray. I hope I've ordered the Blu-ray version.
Yeah.
I'm going to be very upset if I've order the DVD version, it's out on Blu-ray.
If you don't order the DVD version, I'll order the Blu-ray version, you can swap.
Oh, what a good idea! but the trouble is, if it's on limited edition, you're not going to get it. So it says, pre-order your copy now.
Fair enough.
Name of the Doctor, Night of the Doctor, Day of the Doctor, Time of the Doctor, Invention of Space and Time, Five-ish Doctors reboot, Ultimate Guide, Science of Doctor Who, Doctor Who the Proms 2013, I missed that,
yeah,
so I'm particularly pleased that that's going to be on there.
Why don't you like the expression Whovian? Have you not heard the other one that's going around at the moment, Whotinies?
No, I don't like that one either.
And I hate that one.
Yeah, what's wrong with Whovian?
I accepted
Whovian back in the...
I just don't like the term.
In the day.
I like Doctor Who fan.
In the day, yeah. In the 80s, Whovian was...
The first time I ever heard of it was when Peter Davison was a guest on Children in Need when he first became the Doctor. And Terry Wogan asked him about, because Star Trek fans were called Trekkies or something like that, and he said, oh, yes, I believe they're called Whovians, and that's the first time I ever heard of the term. Not a fan of it, to be honest with you, but you know, people...
And I've got a Whovian sticker, well, not sticker, magnet on the back of my car.
Well,
Whovian and Proud, my Twitter account says Whovian.
I just prefer to think of myself as... a member of the Seal of Rassilon.
Well, we've got them, haven't we? Yes. Yeah, you've got a tattoo. I've got the badge. Yeah. I think
people like
to
call themselves Whovians. All good luck to them. I personally don't like the term. So there you go. I'm going to check on my emails now to see if I've actually got them.
I really enjoyed. Did you like Kirby the when Billy put up on the 20 megabyte today, the picture of him drinking and then that just.
Oh yes, you added your picture.
Kirby added his.
I haven't seen those. Oh, for God's sake, I should be doing that.
Look, there's Kirby, look.
Oh, I haven't I done it?
I think you were probably busy.
Yeah, I only saw that today.
I was at shock.
So we're all going to have to put up our pictures.
Yeah, this was just happening. It started off with going on about Northerners, and then I confessed that I'm actually a Northerner. And,
oh, you donut.
What's the wrong with being a Northerner? Oh, right. Oh, you did order it on DVD. Well, you are a donut then.
Where are you from, Deb?
Doncaster, so not that far north. South Yorkshire.
Don't start talking about geography to them.
Every
they probably think you have to step over to the next door and you're in that place. Yes.
But I sound like I speak received pronunciation.
Do you now? Stop flapping your ears.
Sorry.
Speaking of Time of the Doctor, my youngest daughter still has not seen it. Because she's refusing to let go of the 11th Doctor and does not want to see it.
So she's not going to be watching Peter Capaldi on the 23rd?
I don't know.
Huh.
I don't know. The other two are ready and willing to go on with another Doctor, but the youngest does not want to see the end of the 11th Doctor.
Huh.
Okay. Well, I'm going to see the end of this podcast and look forward to next week, as per usual, where we'll be recording on the Monday and be
This ought to be interesting because I've never seen Enlightenment.
No, haven't you? Good. I'm quite sure you haven't seen it. I haven't seen it for a while.
I thought I'd cast all my votes, and obviously I hadn't.
Well, get your finger out and go.
No, I've done it already. I've done it. But I thought I had before.
I hope it's not any six-part stories you've been voting for.
And if I have any trouble obtaining the ability to view any of it, I'll let you all know.
You have to bear in mind, lovely Mary, that if you really do get completely stuck, I have got everything, so I can get it to you somehow.
Okay.
We have ways of doing it.
Yeah. fairly legitimate ways rather than...
Well, you know, the thing is that when sites like Daily Motion take down videos that people have put up, some people are watching the stories and they're not paying, but just as Big Finish always says, subscribers get more. Mm. When you buy the DVDs, you get so much more that I don't know why just...
Exactly.
Yeah, that should prompt people when they see it to say, "Ooh, I want to see the extras. I don't want to do all this other." That would encourage people to buy them instead of just, you know, taking them down for their own reasons.
Some people don't pay any attention to the extras. They just want the story.
Yeah, they just want the story. But there are those who are prompted by watching it to, I want more. So they go out and buy it.
I've done that with a few of the ones we've watched that I've watched most of them on Daily Motion. Yeah, mm-hmm. I've done that. Yeah. Got out and bought the DVD and the book.
I never watched and used any of these services, but I know plenty of people do. Anyway, next week it's going to be Enlightenment and that's about it really, isn't it? Thank you for listening to the show.
Yes.
Thank you for the four pieces of feedback we got. Amazing.
Mm. It's unprecedented. Oh, yeah, they were brilliant. Every one of them was great, yeah.
And thank you for Kirby. Just thank you for Kirby.
What?
Thank you, Kirby.
What did I do?
Thank you for being you.
I'm being sarcastic. Anyway, so until next week. Bye.
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 Goodbye, fancy pants.
20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast is an APV Services production and is a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is the trademark of the BBC. No copyright infringement intended.